What's up, everybody, and welcome into the H&M Trucking Podcast, episode 46 on the docket today. Thank you all for being here. I am your host, Marcus, and as always, we've got a jam-packed episode for you right around the corner. We're going to talk to four awesome guests today and get their insight when it comes to the FMCSA's potential speed limiter mandate. Back in the fall of 2023, the Department of Transportation released some information on this and basically said, hey, we're going to limit speed across all highways and freeways to 68 miles per hour for commercial motor vehicles. Of course, as you might expect, everybody got hot under the collar about that. They later came back and redacted that information. I don't know, man. It's a little bit confusing. It's like they're saying, hey, we're going to make a law. And then somebody's like, we don't like that law. And then they're like, well, hang on. We didn't say we were going to make that law. We said we were going to make a law that's kind of like that. Look, as always, I've got my doubts when it comes to legislators in our government. But I also have faith that we will figure something out that hopefully works for everybody. And right now, I'm not sure that this is it. You will hear in my conversations coming up a little bit later that maybe there are some doubts from others in the industry. We're going to talk to H&M's Executive Vice President Dale Cook, along with co-host Denny Stone, retired H&M driver, about this coming up just around the corner. And then we will hear from drivers Tom Woods and Justin Shearer, and we'll talk about that among all sorts of other things. Very excited about today's episode and what we've got for you. But that being said, I don't have a lot of time, so we need to get to our new driver announcements. And let me pull up my applause, because we are welcoming Tommy Sweet to the Hopper side. Welcome, Tommy Sweet. We are welcoming Mike Wellborn as the Southeast Regional Driver. What's up, Mike? Welcome to the party. We got Bert Weaver driving van OTR. What's up, Bert? And last but certainly not least, we've got Autumn McPherson. She's joining the Hopper OTR division. Welcome, Autumn. This has been such a cool thing that we've started to do when we're welcoming the new drivers, jumping on board with H&M each week. And I got to thank Sherry Vogler personally for that. Okay, if you're walking around the office, you see Sherry bebopping around there, stop by and just give her a pat on the back and a big thank you from me and the rest of the podcast team. She has been amazing, just like Eve is amazing, just like all the people that I deal with at H&M to make this podcast happen have treated me outstanding and have always been there and helped me out. Looking for that to keep moving for sure. And big ups to Sherry for coming up with this idea to introduce new drivers each week. So welcome once again to Tommy, Mike, Bert, and Autumn. We hope you guys really enjoy your career here with H&M. You got a great company to drive for and your very own shiny podcast to listen to every Wednesday at 5 a.m. Eastern Time. Just click that subscribe button and help us out. Let's get to our very first chat with retired H&M driver Denny Stone and Executive Vice President Dale Cook.
From Omaha, Nebraska, to whatever lane you're driving, this is the H&M Trucking Podcast with your host, Marcus Bridges.
Welcome back in here to the H&M Trucking Podcast. I am joined with retired H&M driver Denny Stone right now. Denny joined me last week. We're happy to have him back. And today, even though you can't necessarily see it unless you're watching on YouTube, he's got this really cool background in his video right now. Million miles with the H&M logo up at the top. Denny, thanks so much for being here today. Love the background.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Dale, did they ever get my name up on the wall?
I believe so, sir. I don't go down to that lounge a whole lot. I'm not, you know, in charge of toilet paper or anything anymore. So, but yeah, it's a nice board, and I'm 90% sure your name is on there. Okay.
Yay.
And that other voice you hear there is Dale Cook. Dale, thank you so much for being here again, my friend. Welcome back.
Appreciate it.
Today, guys, I want to start out by just reading a little blurb here. This comes from SambaSafety.com. They did just kind of a smorgasbord of all the different things that are going to be happening this year in the trucking industry. And one of them really stood out to me as kind of a hot button. I hear drivers talk to me a lot about speed. A lot of the times what happens is a driver will get delayed at a shipper or receiver, and then he really is trying to get to that next stop, and they're pushing the speed to the limits of what is allowed, whether it be legally or within the company. And it seems like something that they're not always that happy about. And then I read this little blurb here, once again from SambaSafety.com. It says a redacted DOT report ruffled feathers earlier last fall, suggesting that commercial vehicle speeds would soon be limited to 68 miles per hour on interstates and highways. The organization quickly backtracked and explained that the specific speed limit has yet to be determined. Evaluation is still underway. However, the official proposal will be published, December 29th, 2023. In addition to the maximum speed limit, the documentation will also outline which types of vehicles are subject to the new regulations. Now, 68 miles an hour is one that I've heard a lot, but I also, in doing some research on what the FMCSA was playing around with here, fellas, saw speeds as low as 58, 60, 65, and 68. And I want to start here with you, Denny, since you've got so much experience behind the wheel. What are your thoughts on speed limiters? Why or why not?
Well, obviously, these drivers are going to push it to the limit because they're every mile makes money, but I guess I'll cite California as an example. Trucks are limited to 55 in California. So you get one truck that's going 55 or 57, another truck that's going 57 and a half or 58 to try to get around him, or 60, whatever. By the time that truck gets around the other truck, going just a couple of miles an hour over the posted speed limit, you've got a 2 mile backup of traffic behind him. And then all of those drivers are frustrated. All the four-wheeler drivers are frustrated because they've taken so long for this truck to get around the other truck. And I don't know that it's actually going to help in the long run. There's so many other things they could address to make it a safer roadway, but I'm thinking that it's just going to create more problems than it solves.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very heavily echoed sentiment out there, based on the drivers I've spoken to anyway. Dale, from the company standpoint, what do you think about this proposed legislation? Are you excited about it? Is it something that you're not looking forward to if it actually gets pushed through? What are your thoughts?
Well, being a fairly staunch Republican, I don't think the government needs to tell us what to do, number one. Number two, Denny's talking about the snail race and the safety issues that become involved in that. You know, number one, the trucks, they travel next to each other with, you know, several, sometimes inches in between them. It creates a passing situation that's difficult for the driver, especially if there's an incline or a decline in there where they, you know, they can roll free. There are some, definitely some negatives that come along with limiting them at such a low number. The other is closing speed. If you're in Wyoming or Montana or Texas where they've got the 85 mile an hour speed limit, and you get two trucks that are traveling again at that 58 or 62, 65 area, and they close on them rather quickly. They look for places to get through, get around. Denny's felt this, where they dart in front of the truck the minute they get around one. They don't wait for the other truck to clear. They go to the right-hand lane. There are some safety issues that would come of having such a diverse speed between the four-wheeler and the 18-wheeler that it could create more accident situations. I couldn't disagree with Denny at all.
Sure.
The other factors you have to look at are from a standpoint, you know, H&M's units are governed at 70 miles per hour. Our insurance company downgrades us because we don't go to 68. A lot of insurance companies want to reduce that speed because, you know, a truck is an 80,000 pound killing machine with the wrong guy behind the wheel. It's about driver education and them understanding those safety and those rules of the road, a courtesy. One of my pet peeves, I'm sure it's one of Denny's too. Denny and I have known each other a long time. When did people forget how to use an indicator, a turn signal, a blinker, call it what you want, but it's an indication to the other traffic what your intention is to do. The courtesy on the on-ramps, that's going to become a real problem if you lower those speeds where the merging traffic is going to try and merge at the speed limit I'll use over by my house on Highway 6 and Interstate 80 where junctions and I get on the interstate. It used to be the truck would move over and give you room. Everybody kind of traveled at the same speed. Maybe you got slowed down going up the hill, but you didn't have to worry about anything else. So there could be some major impacts there. But from a safety standpoint, slower trucks is a good deal. That's been proven that, you know, the slower the trucks are traveling, the less likely they are to lose it in poor weather conditions or in extended traffic conditions within the city, especially when you have construction areas, all those things. So there's some validity to having the truck move slower. But, you know, we're at 70 now. 68 was what we used to be several years ago. It became difficult to hire drivers, and we made a business decision to move back to 70. What we're giving up there is also miles per gallon. The difference in 2 miles per hour for a driver over the course of an 8-hour day, Denny knows this math, right? Denny, I mean, or a 10-hour day. We'll make the math simpler for those listening. You know, that's 2 miles more that you're going to travel for 10 hours, which means you're 20 miles further down the road. And to a truck driver, that means you made an extra, you know, $12 or $15, $12 or $15 a day. When a driver is out working 300 days a year, you guys doing the math with me here, right?
Yes, sir.
It turns an extra, you know, $4,500 a year for that driver. So I get that they look at those numbers. I hope I did that math right, doing it in my head. But, you know, there's things that you look at from that perspective, from both the driver and for the company. Mm-hmm. Lastly, you know, with those miles per gallon, that makes a huge difference. Just to say, if it's 1/10 of a mile per gallon, the difference that company does over the course of the year, you know, that might mean instead of buying 450,000 gallons a month, we're buying 430,000 gallons a month, and 20,000 times $3 turns into a lot of money real fast, and do that on a yearly basis. So there are a lot of factors involved in that. I personally don't think we need to have the government regulate that. And I think that is up to the companies and those choices out there. You have some carriers that, you know, they're beginning drivers. They start them out at a lower speed. They give them other opportunities if they're safe, if they're being compliant with fuel targets, you know, or miles per gallon targets where they give them a little more speed. There's 100 different options that you can use. And I don't think it needs to be mandated at 65 or 68 because there are a lot of issues that can arise out of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds like to me it would be like governing this at a federal level would be dropping a rock into the pond, and they're not really taking any they don't have any consideration for the ripples that are going to go out from that rock they drop in the pond. It sounds like there are a ton of circumstances that will arise, safety, financial, insurance, you name it, from just changing this on a federal level. Denny, I want to ask you about what your thoughts are on something that Dale said there. How do you feel about this kind of federal regulation versus companies kind of governing themselves in this right?
Well, I think that the company should govern this. H&M is a good example of rewarding good drivers. There are a lot of bad drivers out there. You know, you were talking this past week about the autonomous trucks, and I've always said, hire a professional and let that man do what he's good at. Quit letting the truck take over. I get it. You probably get insurance breaks and things like that. I don't see that big picture because I'm not in that side of it. But the same thing applies with the speed. For instance, when I was driving a truck that was governed at 67 or 68, I know I'm in the minority here because most of them put it on the floor and try to get every mile they can out. But I'd set my cruise at 65. That way, if I did come up on another truck that was going just a little bit slower, I had that little extra bit I could push past him without doing this race back and forth that would take mile after mile. I don't think, like we said last week, I think the government's putting a Band-Aid on things by legislating all of this that affects the drivers. Other factors need to come into play. One of the biggest being is detention, keeping a truck motionless, which affects his livelihood, affects the bottom line for the company and everything else, keeping him sitting somewhere for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12 hours. I mean, it's not unheard of to be over 10 hours at a shipper or receiver. That's totally unacceptable. That needs to be addressed, not just the drivers. And I'm probably going to say things like that again. So just get used to it.
You know, that's just fine, because that's exactly what I want to hear. I feel like having these conversations is kind of a step in the direction of trying to figure this all out. I don't think we're going to change the world here on the H&M Trucking Podcast, but if we can change one little thing for H&M drivers, then I feel like we've done our due diligence here. Dale, that is an interesting thing that Denny just brought up for me, the detention for drivers. Do you feel like there should be some sort of, now I'm not going to use the word legislation again, because I just want to say I mirror your thoughts, Dale, as far as somebody telling us what to do. Kind of thought the whole thing behind America was the whole free country aspect of this whole thing. But hey, we all have to listen to somebody every now and then. How do you feel about some sort of rules being in place, or maybe companies trying to kind of steer shippers and receivers towards not delaying their drivers so much, causing this ripple effect that causes some drivers to want to have to slam it to the floor so they can get to the next stop?
Wow, that's the age-old question of detention, right, Denny? You know,
yep.
We try and find good customers that are willing to pay us for those delays, or that are, they're efficient in getting our drivers in and out. Of course, you're sometimes dealing with the mechanical world, particularly if you're talking bulk, or when you're talking augers or elevators, those type of situations, manufacturing plants where they're loading bulk material. Bag material is just poor logistics a lot of times, or lack of personnel to get trucks loaded and out of there. They schedule something assuming production is going to get it in the bag and it's going to be bagged and ready to go. Those things are never going to go away. Let's face it, this is not a purely automated and perfect world that we live in. Mm-hmm. You know, AI is going to help some of those things. There's going to be more sensors in the trucks that are going to make them safer. There's all that technology that continues to come. Denny and I started working, you know, when there was no such thing as a fax machine, for Pete's sakes. Look where we've gotten to now. I'm familiar.
You know, Dale, I'll interrupt here just for a second to say the customers, the H&M customers, as a general rule, I'd never had a problem with them. It was when you had to broker a load to get the backhaul that we ran into these huge delays. And I don't know the fix for that, but like I say, hats off to most of the customers. Winfield is a prime example. They're usually ready. I never spent any significant time waiting on them. Yeah. But it's that, you know, you get us out to Georgia or somewhere, and then you got to get us back to the Midwest. And it's a backhaul situation where you broker that load. And that's where I ran into the huge delays.
You know, we continue to always look for customer freight as opposed to that brokerage world. And here we are in this down cycle in our business where those 3PLs are now, you know, those third party folks are definitely in there. You know, broker is not it's not a four letter word. They are necessary in our environment or in the world we live in. But, you know, to go back to the detention side of this, as Marcus mentioned, we have good customers that were usually eligible to bill that detention. H&M has a policy that's very favorable for detention layover. We even pay for winter delays. Okay. Mm-hmm. Most companies will not pay for weather at all, but our detention starts after a 3 hour period. We have to balance that. It's really, you know, from a pay standpoint, if I could snap my fingers and change the world, the driver would be paid by the hour or by the day, just like the human beings that work inside of our office. Drivers are human beings and should be paid in that way and not be expected to sit still. I always scold our folks here when they tell a driver, well, you're just going to have to sit there till morning, right? Denny, you're familiar with that terminology, right? You just have to wait. It won't be ready till morning. Just stay there. Well, there you are, mm-hmm. You know, a captive in the cab of your truck. If you're good with your personal conveyance, you might go to Walmart and come back or get some supplies or go to the truck stop and take a shower and come back in the morning. But some of these places, if you leave, well, you lose your place in line. So the driver's forced to stay there in order to be next in line or not lose your spot in that line, first come, first serve. Well, the scheduling has gotten better over time. There's less of that now. But with the advent of the electronic logs, drivers, it's more difficult for them to catch up because they're unable to get their rest sleeping at a shipper and then take off. You know, the requirements, you know, if we follow the letter of the law when it comes to hours of service or logging, you know, the driver, he's waiting to load. He should be on duty. Most of our drivers don't do that, of course. They show that they're off duty and relieved of duty and could do what they want. And to a certain degree, they do have that flexibility to run to a truck stop or go back. But they're working under this restriction of time. And detention, you know, when you're not paid detention, you're paid basically to sit. My joke is within the office is when they're not feeling like they're sitting in the driver's seat or giving empathy to that driver, they're saying, well, you just have to stay there. Well, here's what I need you to do, dispatcher. I need you to come to the office on Saturday, okay? On Saturday, the day that they're not normally there. I just need you to sit there all day long today. Don't do anything. I don't need you to do anything. Don't need you to do any work. But or make that during a weekday even to make it more of an example. I just need you to sit there all day today and not do anything. And you know what? I'm just not going to pay you. But that's what I need you to do. That's what we do to the driver, right?
Yeah.
And somehow we expect the driver to be happy with that because that's trucking, right? How do we change those things? Well, we can scream and yell all we want, but it's really about finding good customers, being able to absorb some of that cost if freight rates are decent enough, but you're still, that issue's not going away. Denny, how long did you drive total?
Over 15 years.
In that 15 years, there wasn't a whole lot of change. Let's face it, there might have been technology change, but this situation was the same. I've been sitting here at H&M for 30 years in the same chair, and we've been having this detention discussion that entire time. Until we pay the drivers hourly for the time that they put in, or pay them by the day and remove some of these restrictions of having to sit someplace, it's going to be a similar situation. And I wish I had the answers and could snap my finger, because I do have empathy for the drivers. You know, sitting in that seat, having driven a truck a little bit when I was young, it's not fun sitting in a line and just waiting, okay? Especially back in the day, Denny, when we didn't have air conditioning, right? You just had to sit there in the heat or sit there in the freezing cold temperatures. At least you could run your
Pennsylvania.
Truck.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Pennsylvania. You got it. So, you know, there's no perfect answer to this. You know, if we had it, we'd sure snap our fingers and do it.
For sure. Well, and I think that you are already taking some of the good steps because you talked about finding good customers, and we've talked about the joy of having good customer relations on this podcast before. And you can tell, you know, when hearing Denny talk about some of his experience in the past with good customers, there are good companies out there, good customers that want to help the driver that do have that same empathy that you were talking about, Dale. And then there's the other ones. And I think that's, you know, one bad apple can ruin the whole bunch with that. Unfortunately, but yeah, it's a tough question to answer because there is no easy snap your fingers type of solution for it. Obviously, it wouldn't be a 30-year-old problem if that's the case. So, but it's interesting to me in hearing that there's such a wide difference between one customer to the next. You know, it sounds to me like there are some really good companies out there that are thinking, let's make sure that this is efficient. And then there's other companies out there that seriously do not give one, I'll just save the language here, they don't give a damn about the driver that's sitting out there waiting to load up. And that just really, that gets under my skin. And I can't imagine what it's like for a driver, Denny, out there that is dealing with that maybe not only once per day, maybe you've got multiple customers like that. How do you navigate those waters out there, Denny? It seems to me like I'd be chewing my fingernails off after one experience like that.
It is a challenge, and I'll say that there are a lot of drivers out there that shoot themselves in the foot. I've seen it, I wouldn't say daily, but often, where they get mad and they go in and they yell at the girl behind the glass. And, you know, if I were the girl behind the glass, I'm like, okay, fine, I'm going to load this other guy first. No, they just keep going in and raising hell, and it's not doing them any good.
Right.
It's hard to keep to hold your tongue when you've been there for a long time and you've been waiting, but to go in and yell at the people in the warehouse, really, I don't think does you any good in the long run. I guess I'm a rarity these days, but I read. My Kindle was one of my prized possessions on the road. I was usually reading 6 books at a time, and that's what I did while I waited. Other guys maybe play video games or watch TV or I don't know, but that's what I did. I'd sit there and read. I'd read a chapter in one book, close it out, read a chapter in another book. It's still frustrating, but at least I had something to do besides just sit there and stew.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's important.
Everyone's got to find their own way.
Yeah. You got to find your way to pass that time because Stockholm syndrome is a real thing. And you sit inside the same confined space for too long, you might end up with it. And nobody wants that. So, you know, we've done some episodes on this podcast, too, about how drivers stay entertained on the road, different drivers picking different things. Definitely good to have a little bit of a variety there. And sorry for the shameless plug here, but there is a podcast that you can listen to. Comes out once a week, Wednesdays, 5 a.m., called the H&M Trucking Podcast, where you're going to get some great stuff from guys like Danny Stone and Dale Cook. So listen, all the funny stuff aside and tongue-in-cheek things aside, I wish that there was more that we could do through this podcast to help change this type of issue that you guys see with the delays. And I really do wish at the same time that we could do something about this legislation that seems like it really does want to come out. Dale, if you had to look into your crystal ball, do you think that the FMCSA is going to hit the industry with these speed limiters within the next year? Or do you think that this is something that can be battled back by those of us that fight for better things?
Well, I think anything, we all have a voice. And if those voices ring true together, yeah, we can hold things off like this. You can't, you know, this is not a socialistic government that we live in just yet. Okay. And let's hope that we can continue to be, you know, be free in the U.S. and have a voice. You know, deregulation changed the trucking industry, you know, and it made it an economic boom. It changed what people pay for the price of their food, all those things. So lack of regulation is something that we'd love to see more of. The requirements, the costs that get involved because the government picks and chooses. But we did it to ourselves a little bit when you had drivers who were willing to drive 20 hours a day, you know, all in the name of a buck. It's about compensating those drivers fairly so they make a good living just like everybody else. And if I was to rub my crystal ball, I would think, you know, think back into the 70s when they changed the speed limit to 55 everywhere to save on fuel, right? Will the government get it done at some point? Likely there'll be something out there. I think there'll be a lot of backlash. If it goes anything under 68, people are really going to scream. But there's so much of the trucking industry that's already slowed down to 65, 68, 70 that it's probably not going to make people scream enough. But if they drop that down, like you said, to 60, you know, California, boy, there's my favorite state, right, at 55. Some of the other eastern states, 55. Do they have less accidents and claims and whatever? No, they don't. I mean, it hasn't been proven. In fact, you know, it's just different types of accidents, I think. Mm-hmm. So will it save some lives at 68? I sure hope so. But we're going to stick at 70 here at H&M because we feel like that's fair to the driver. That's fair to those out there that are motoring public. And your guess is as good as mine, guys, is what's going to happen. So.
Sure. Well, as their northern neighbor, Dale, I feel a lot the same about California. And if you ever want to come stand on the southern border of Oregon and give them a piece of your mind with me, please just feel free to crash at my place. All right.
Yeah, I will just make one of those big signs and hold it up or something on the side of the road.
There you go. Hey, that seems to be effective in California. Let's try it out. Well, listen, Dale, we really appreciate the time here. I know you're a busy guy. I want to let you get back to it. I'm going to hang out here with Denny and talk this out a little bit more, but we'll let you be on your way. Thank you for the time, and we'll get you back on soon, okay?
All right, I got one more thing to say. Old retired guy, give me a call, you know. I know you got plenty of time on your hands. We'll shoot the breeze some more, all right?
You got it, buddy. I miss you.
Thanks, Denny. You bet. Yes, thanks, sir. Marcus. See you guys later.
Take it easy.
You bet. Bye-bye. You bet.
That is Dale Cook there, VP of H&M Trucking. And, you know, Denny, it's really cool to hear the relationship that you guys very clearly had. You guys spent a lot of time working together, didn't you?
Well, we did. We actually didn't communicate that much, but we always had a good relationship because obviously he's in the office. I'm on the road. He's busy. I'm busy. So we would visit from time to time, but it wasn't like we hung out and went to lunch every day or anything. I want to jump back, if you will, just a minute, if you'll allow me.
Please.
Still talking about the speed limit. I'll just say training companies, and you'll probably know who I'm talking about. One starts with W, one starts with S. I'll leave it at that. But they would restrict their drivers to less miles per hour than we were. Mm-hmm. And what I saw happening virtually nationwide is these guys are trying to make up what they've lost when they get inside a city limit.
Oh,
so they're
okay.
Flying by. Speed limit may be 35 inside. They're doing 50, 55. So I would expect more accidents to happen inside cities if if the legislation comes down and all drivers are restricted, there's going to be many more of them that are going to be trying to make up that time going through where there's more access points that, you know, in the interstate, you've only got so many places where somebody could come up. You get inside of city limits and you got roads coming from every direction, people pulling out of parking lots, you know, mama turning around to scold her baby. There's way more options or opportunities for something to happen. Anyway, just a thought.
No, that's great, because and this is why I like having you here, is because I don't think of all the different little nuances all the time because I don't have that experience behind the wheel. Another thing I didn't think of that Dale actually brought up earlier that kind of goes along with this is that closing speed issue. There are some places mm-hmm. out there where the speed limit's 80 miles an hour, and if you're in a truck that's governed at 60 and all of a sudden somebody's coming along at 85 miles an hour, you have no idea how fast you close the distance when you're doing 20, 25 miles an hour faster than the rig that you're approaching. And I never even thought of that being an issue, but I could see there be a lot more rear endings in states with really high speed limits limiting these trucks, because they're going to be going even slower than what they already were. And man, I can't imagine what that must feel like, coming up at 85 and seeing a truck too late. Because that thing's not moving. It doesn't matter how hard you hit it.
Yeah, and that's kind of lends itself to the same thing I was talking about when, like in California, when there's a truck trying to pass another truck and why the traffic backs up so far.
Yep.
Another issue is if they won't let you over. If there's somebody broken down on the shoulder, you know, the thing to do is move over.
Yep.
Which it's the law, but it's also common sense. It only takes one idiot pulling out in front of a big truck going highway speed when they're doing 5-10 miles an hour pulling back onto the freeway, and you have to basically lock it up and hope your trailer doesn't try to pass you before you move over.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a lot. You'll get a fat ticket for that too. In at least I know in my state, I've known a couple people that didn't get over, say when a cop had somebody pulled over. I know one guy. The cop had the guy pulled over and was out of his car talking to the gentleman he'd pulled over. And because my friend didn't pull over, the cop ended that traffic stop right there, got right in his car and took off and went and pulled my buddy over and gave him a pretty sizable ticket for not yielding that lane. And that's an important thing. You don't want your police officers, your DOT officials, your truck drivers, your tow truck drivers, your mechanics. These people are working right on the shoulder of a busy interstate. You should pull over for them and get the hell out of the way. And you should definitely let a truck over if they're trying to get over. That old, I feel like I did miss a chance to comment on the fact that there is a national blinker light fluid shortage, Denny. I don't know whether people can't keep those things lubricated or what, but I don't see them get used very often out here.
When I first started driving, I hadn't been on my own solo for more than maybe 6 months. And I had this old, on the CB, I heard this old timer. You hear him, you go, well, that'll teach him. The other guy goes, what? He goes, that little blinky thing's called an indicator. It indicates what I'm going to do. It ain't a permission asker.
Oh, that's good. That is very good. Well, I think that's a great place for us to wrap this up today, Denny. I really appreciate you coming back on and joining me again. We're going to get you in for more of these. It's been so cool to have such a wealth of knowledge to be able to pull from and help me out in these conversations and help me see the nuances of driving that I've never really been able to pay attention to because I hadn't been cued into them before. So as always, we appreciate your time. Are you enjoying this yet?
Oh, yeah, it's a blast. I'm having fun, and I don't have to drive and be away from the house.
Perfect. And how's Gilly doing?
He's doing great. He's sitting back here on the couch behind me.
All right. Well, I like the fact that you still got a co-pilot with you, Denny, and we'll be in touch with you very soon, all right?
Sounds good. Thank you, Marcus.
Yep, thanks for stopping by. Time to get some drivers on the horn here and find out what their thoughts are on this whole speed limiter rigmarole, if you will. With me today, I've got H&M driver Tom Woods back on the show. What's up, Tom?
How are you guys doing today?
Oh, man, I can't complain. It's too early in the morning. Just give me a little bit of time, Tom. I'll figure something out.
He needs some coffee. Get this guy a coffee. Get him a shot of Patron or something.
There you go. That sounds right up my alley. Also joining us today here is H&M driver Justin Shearer. Justin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I wanted to get you guys on today to talk a little bit about speed limiters, because as I was poking around, just doing my research on the industry, I did see something that was proposed back in the fall where the the DOT ruffled some feathers, suggesting that commercial vehicle speeds would soon be limited to 68 miles per hour on interstates and highways. Of course, there was a ton of backlash to that, so they took the number away. They redacted it. But in my research here, I found that not only was 68 miles an hour listed as a possible speed, 65 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, and even 58 miles an hour were listed as a possible mandated speed for trucks. Tom, I'm going to start with you here. I am wondering, first off, what you think about speed limiters in general. I know H&M is at 70 miles an hour, but how do you feel about this legislation? Do you think it's something that they're going to try to push through? And as a driver, how does that concern you?
Well, legislation is probably going to push it through. They're going to do what they're going to do anyways. Really nothing we can do about it. And what it is, these big companies out here, Warner and Crete and J.B. Hunt and Walmart, those people who are hurting this industry. By point, 68 miles an hour is still too slow. I honestly think these trucks are rated to run 75 miles an hour. I think our trucks should run 75 miles an hour, and we should be out here running, be able to run the speed limit. The further you go west, the higher the speed limit is. I've seen it up to 85 miles an hour out in Texas. I don't understand how these people are saying, hey, you know, you got to run. The insurance says you got to run this. The insurance says that. 90% of your trucking industries out of your big companies own their own insurance. What they're doing is they're listening to people and they're saying, well, you know, you could do this if you run your truck at this speed, or you're going to save this much fuel. I have talked to people out here over the road, owner ops, by the way, that's got the big trucks. We're talking about the KWs and the W900s. The W900s are 379 feet. Well, guess what? They're using probably an extra gallon of gas or diesel, say, for going during their trip per mile, maybe an extra gallon per mile. Yes, that's a little bit of a cost increase on fuel and for speed, but if you do the speed limiter, it's just going to cause more accidents out here. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and you're not the first person to have that opinion. Actually, earlier on in the show, we talked to Executive Vice President of H&M, Dale Cook, and he brought up some really good points about it. One of them that I hadn't even thought of was closing speed. It's got to be, you really have to be paying attention. If you're a four-wheeler out there doing 85 legally, and there's a truck in the right lane doing 58 because that's as fast as they're legally allowed to go, I mean, you got to wonder if you'll even have a chance to react to that when you see it, if you're coming around a bend or something like that. So I do see, you know, in the backups, Dale called it the snail race. When one truck's doing 58 and a half and the other one's doing 58, they're going to back up traffic for miles behind them because they can't accelerate even a couple miles an hour to get past that truck they're trying to pass. So
absolutely. Now, you do understand weight difference. Truck's passing me right now, going down the road right now. But I'm running my speed limit, 60. I'm running actually 67. So I'm going down the road. This guy right here, he don't have a load on, but I do, and I'm going down the road. My truck's a little slower, but his is just a little bit faster, and he comes around me. What if it's the opposite? Or what if we're both trying to pass because maybe he goes 2 miles an hour faster than I do because maybe they did set the speed limiter at 68. You know, and maybe H&M decided to drop theirs down to 66, you know, and maybe my truck weighs a little bit more than yours, or a little bit lighter. So that means I get down the road, so you're still going to have that problem. These trucks just going to say, I can beat you. I can get down the road faster than you can. And all we're doing is out here fighting each other, you know?
Right, right. Justin, how do you feel about this possible speed limiter legislation?
Yeah, I agree. I think all this is going to do is plug up the highways and byways more than it already is.
How much of a difference do you think 2 miles an hour would make, Justin? Now, you guys are, like we said earlier, H&M's got them governed at 70. If you're governed down to 68, how much of a difference does that make in your day?
In a day, probably not too many miles, you know, but we're not going to run as many miles as we could at 70 or 75 miles an hour in a day.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it makes you more or less safe out there having that 2 miles an hour taken away from you?
No, I don't think it makes it more or less safe. I think that, you know, going back to the four-wheelers, we're going to be plugging up the highways and there's going to be a lot more accidents on the road because they're going to start passing us on the shoulder and all this other stuff because they're impatient most of the time.
Yeah. That's probably the best word ever used to describe four-wheelers, at least in my experience. I can't even imagine what it's like for you guys out there.
It's horrible sometimes, especially in traffic.
Yeah. I can tell you right now, you can tell a four-wheeler going down the road that somebody in their family or maybe they're slowed down and give you that flashlight to get you to come on over to get around another vehicle, another truck. You can tell there are some of those people out there, but that's one in probably 1,000.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to become one of those people, Tom, and I've learned little things from talking to you drivers as much as I have. And for instance, Chris Toogood, back when he used to come on the podcast, told me, he said, man, if you're going to flash your lights at me and you're behind me, just flick them on and off. Don't hit me with those bright lights, man. Those things are pointed up right into my mirrors. And I thought, man, I've been flashing you drivers with my bright lights to let you know that you can get over my entire life. And I didn't know, you know, I was trying to be courteous. I didn't know at the same time I was being sort of an ass, but I try. That's one of the things I hope that this podcast can do. If there are some four-wheelers out there listening, try to be a little bit like I'm trying to be here and heed the advice from the professional drivers that you get, because trust me, they're out there a lot more. They know a lot more than what you do. And that's why you guys are such a wealth of information for this podcast.
Right.
You know, it's hard.
We're out here working. We're out here working. We're not out here joyriding down the road going to see grandma and grandpa. And I'm going to tell you right now, there are back roads for these people to drive down so they can be out of our way. You know what I mean? While we're out here on the road. I mean, honestly, truly, probably 60, 65, maybe 70% of these people out here don't even really need to be out here on the road, you know?
Yeah, they're just out cruising. I mean, I used to do it all the time. Man, I grew up in a small town. The only thing we had to do was drive from point A to point B and then turn around and go back to point A. You know, it's definitely a thing that happens in rural areas, especially when there's not a lot to do. And that is an interesting point that you bring up, and it's one that I think gets forgotten, is that you guys are out here doing a job. You're not just out just driving because you really enjoy it. You've got a place to be. You're scheduled on when to be there. And that's why it's so interesting to me that 2 miles an hour could make such a difference. If we're talking about a 10-hour day, that's 20 miles that mathematically it says you're not going to put on. So what does that do to the schedule?
I want to tell you this. I do want to say this. Justin made a comment about driving 68 miles an hour. Would that change a difference in the mileage? I'm going to tell you yes, okay? Because I have literally drove my truck at 65 miles an hour across Indiana, and it kicks your time back. You're wasting more time out here getting across, get down the road, okay, for one. If my truck could run 75 miles an hour every day in the states where I can run 75 miles an hour, and because 75 miles an hour is still a good safe speed, and it's not dangerous for the truck or nothing like that when you're in open roads. I can gain anywhere from 75, probably 75 to 100 miles, about 75 miles a day in distance going down the road. So yes, it'll help me get to my destination faster, help me get more miles down the road at the end of the month. You know what I mean? We gain more miles, that's how we get paid. And make a little bit more money by the end of the month, you know?
So, sure.
Yes, 75 miles an hour is would be a good speed for the trucking industry to get us down the road faster and all that.
How do you feel about that, Justin?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, 70, 75, it's not going to really give you that many more miles per day, I don't think, you know, and add that much more to your paycheck every week. But it's the difference between, you know, having to park somewhere unsafe versus make it somewhere, you know, where you're safer to park at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and that's a big one because there's not a lot of open parking out there. We've had that conversation plenty of times on this podcast.
Absolutely.
What do you guys think about the delays at shippers and receivers, the detention that you guys end up sitting there just kind of passing time and waiting for? Do you think that that has an effect overall on drivers trying to get places quicker, trying to increase their speeds because maybe they lost some time at a shipper or receiver?
Yeah, I mean, we don't... What we're doing, we're not spending too much time at the shipper and receiver pulling hoppers, you know, but the like the drive-ins, I'm sure they're probably sitting indoors or docks waiting for hours on end. By the time they get loaded, everything might be out of hours
right
for the day, you know, and can't go nowhere.
Last sure. night I had to sit for, I was at my receiver for 6 hours.
6 hours?
Six hours last night before I got unloaded, yes.
And was that because they were short-staffed or there was a huge line of people? What caused that delay, Tom?
Man, you know, it's the product in these trailers. They're loading them, and then it's compacted, and we get there. Well, I got there, and I had to sit there for 3.5 hours before they called me back to unload. Okay, then they called me back to get probed and to get my product checked. Then they pulled me around to the door, which I sat there for about 35 or 40 minutes, and then I pulled in. And of course, you're the only manual labor that unloads that. Sometimes it comes out good, sometimes it doesn't. I think, and what they have done, if you look down at, like a hopper, you look down in the hole, and there's a huge pit under there, but they're opening to where you drop your product in, and I'm not joking, a 24 by 18 inch hole that you got to put product in, okay? We're so worried about slowing the time down to put a product in a pit that is humongous under there, and they just covered it up.
And what's the thought process behind that? Because I mean, I've seen the the hopper bottoms on these trailers that you guys are pulling around, and they are, I would think, bigger than 24 by 18.
I'm thinking they're more like a 32 by probably a 40, maybe. You know right. what? Next time I'll give you the measurements on that there, Marcus. I'll measure that out because now you got me thinking about that. But ever how big the hopper opening is how big of the opening should be on the grate.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it should be bigger because if the pit's deeper, I open that door, that product comes out, I can get it out of my trailer, I'm out the door, I'm in and I'm out. You know, I'm down the road. You know, it's like they want to slow you down, and then they don't have nobody there to help you to clean out your trailer or anything like that because that is no longer my product. As soon as I pull in there and he hands me a POL that he has signed, that is no longer H&M's product no more, and it's no longer my responsibility. So I should be able to unload that product, get it in, and get it out. Get in there and get out. You know, you have your product, I get the hell out of the damn way. You know what I mean?
Sure. So dig a little bit deeper with me here, fellas, and tell me, why do you think it is like that at some places? Is it just a staffing issue? Is it the fact that they don't have any respect for your guys' time? They don't care about your schedule? Is it just incompetence? What causes this? Because this is another, you know, a lot like the parking. The more we talk about this issue, the more it sounds like it's a way bigger issue than what people that don't drive every day kind of understand. You guys are spending, 6 hours. That's unbelievable. That's a quarter of a day. That's way too long to be sitting at one place just twiddling your thumbs. And if that's happening multiple times a week, what types of time loss are we talking about here? I mean, you could lose an entire day if this happened to you four times in a week, and that doesn't seem too out of the ordinary.
Justin, an entire day? How about 4 days? Marcus, yeah. What about that, Justin?
Yeah.
4 days.
Tell me the story.
Spending 4 days at a door on the property waiting to unload a product.
Yeah, because they order too much product.
Wow. And you just, and that was you, Justin?
Yeah, I've had that happen before where they order too much product, and I've sat there for 3 days over in Ohio somewhere waiting to unload product, yeah.
And those 3 days, you know, you're not making any money, right?
Oh, we get a... Yeah.
Yeah, we make a little bit of money. We get laid over pay, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's not a lot, but it's better than nothing.
Sure.
Okay, so this let me throw this out there. Retention pay. So it's called retention pay for a reason, okay? So, or layover. Whatever you call it, okay? So this is how this works. If I was an owner off and I pull in Alden, Utah, for an example, because this is how this works. If I was an owner off, hey, and I gotta sit there every day. I sit there. I get $500 to sit there, right? H&M is gonna cut me a check for $500 a day for being an owner off. I get all of the retention or layover pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a driver, on a max day for layover is $225. Okay, so is or and I gotta say this because is or is not H&M getting that $500 a day from that place and then only paying us $225 of it. I understand it's their truck and their trailer, but saying that, we sit there, yes, $225 is not bad for just sitting around, but why are we only getting $225? You know what? You know what I mean? We're sitting there, and actually, you're talking about sitting at a place for 4 or 5 days. We're actually standing by as a storage facility. Mm-hmm. So we're on their property waiting to unload as a storage facility until they get decide to unload us. They know what they're doing. They're ordering it in, and they know they're going to use it, but they don't know they're going to use it right away. So they figure they'll go ahead and get it over there, and they'll have it so when they need it. You know what I mean? And they don't mind paying that extra layover for owner ops or company driver or company to the companies, you know?
Yeah. No, and it's interesting, Tom, because we did have an episode, and I'm actually looking up to see which episode it is right now, so I can tell everybody that's listening where to find it. But we talked about detention pay in an episode. It's been a while back, and the one thing when I had James on to answer some of the questions, or at least kind of some of the areas of the questions that you're asking here. One of the reasons that detention pay was what it was because H&M offers some other contingencies like paying for bad weather and things like that, where they'll give you a little bit of money for shutting down if you've got a blizzard going on or something like that. And I feel like it's been so long. I feel like there was a few other things that James had brought up that was like, hey, our detention pay might not be as much, but we are also trying to give you some pay in some other areas where a lot of other companies don't pay. Does that help?
Right.
Does that help bridge that gap a little bit?
A little bit. You know, I mean, it's a win or lose. It's a scale. You know, your one side weighs more than the other on some of the things. I've been out here going down the road talking to other companies, just to bullshit, see what kind of stuff they offer to see. H&M is actually a really good company to work for. I wouldn't bad mouth them at all. I'm just saying, really good company. You know, of course, other companies are just like, you know, they say the same thing, but there's things that we could work on. There's things they could do better for the drivers, you know. But, you know, you was talking about the speed limiters, kind of going back to that. I didn't want to get off track on going back to that. Is 75 miles an hour, is that really hurting the company? Is it really costing any more fuel? No, I don't think so. What it is, they're afraid we're going to get down the road too fast, and they're going to have to work. Maybe the dispatchers are going to have to work just a little bit harder to get us another extra load. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about holding up at the shipper and the receivers. Guess what? They're not making the money we're making. They're making probably bringing home $800 or $900 a week. We're bringing home twice that. Three times that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't give a shit about us out here. They hate truck drivers.
And that really is too bad because it seems like a very important cog in the wheel. I don't know that without you guys, they could do what they do.
Justin, what do you think about going to some of these shippers and receivers?
Well, some of them are really good and some of them are really bad. You know, sometimes you get in there and you get out in less than an hour, and sometimes, you know, you sit there for a day and a half waiting to get loaded or unloaded.
Is there anything that tips you off to how it's going to be before you get there, Justin? Can you identify those? Or is that like, this one's always bad, this one's always good, that type of thing?
Yeah, you can predict which ones are going to be good and which ones are going to be bad before you even get there. And as soon as they send you the load over, you know which ones are good and which ones are bad.
Yeah.
You know, like the place Tom was just at last night, that place you're normally there 6, 7, 8, 9 hours getting unloaded. And there's some years, like I said, you're in and out of there within the hour.
Man, if you're out at like a farm or something like that, dropping off product to a small shipper receiver, I got to tell you right now, if they're going to keep you for 8 or 9 hours, they ought to at least make you breakfast. You know, treat it like a bad one night stand or something, but at least give them a gift basket, you know?
No, I like going to the farms and dairies. Those ones you're in and out. You just dump it on the ground normally and we're out of there.
Okay. Gotcha. So that works out good.
And the places to go, let me tell you where the places to go. The places to go are the places where you go to load and you load on a set of scales. You get exactly what you want. So you go in, you got to load off your gauges. Okay. So they don't listen to you because they don't give a shit. Period. Get me fired up here, Marcus. They don't give a shit. So they overload you on your fucking drives, okay? And then they overload you on your trailer. You go around and you got to drive back out. Drive around there about 200, 300 yards. You got to scale out. You got to get on the scale all your 1,000 pounds over. You got to back up. You got to see which one's over. You got to let that much product out. Then you got to go back over there, scale out again. Make sure you're still not overweight. Make sure you're still not over axles because they want to bitch about that on the FMCA book, you know, complain about, oh my God, we're going to have to write you a ticket because you're 350 pounds over on your axle. That's not hurting a damn thing, you know? But then you got those places you go and they load you on a scale and they get exactly what you want. And you go around and you get your paperwork because they already scaled you out and sent that over to the office. And you pull over there and get your paperwork, you ain't got to wait there very long.
Mm-hmm.
A place that I love to unload. I go there any day. Red Bluff Road in Kentucky. Justin was just there the other day. You pull in a warehouse. This building is, I'm telling you, 400. It's 400 yards long. It's got 40 drops the length of your trailer, and you open your doors up, and it drops down 35 feet to the floor, and you're on a grading. And the whole road is across there is nothing but grading.
Wow. So definitely fix that problem of having to put 500 pounds of shit through a 200-pound hole, it sounds like.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So it kind of sounds like, fellas, here that the answer is probably a complicated one, but maybe with a little bit more investment into their infrastructure, a lot of these places could make it a lot easier on you guys. But it just seems like maybe that's not something that they really care about. They're worried about their own operations, and you guys can just pound sand is kind of what I'm getting here.
Well, you know, you figure this out, Marcus. You got a multi-billion-dollar company. For instance, Tyson. Multi-billion-dollar company. You're going to go in and you're going to scale in out there by the gate. You're going to drive all the way around the back of the building, spend 20 minutes backing into a hole that you could barely get into that you're afraid you're fixed to take your fender off or you're fixed to blow a tire from hitting a sharp edge on a piece of metal that's laying there. They will not move. And they tell you, well, trucks do it all the time. It's your attitude. And you drive all the way back around there and guess what? You're overweight. That's what you got to do. Drive all the way back around on the other side to unload that crap. But we don't want to put scales where we load a product at. You know, it's just, I'm not understanding. It's the industry. And also, you got these young engineers that don't understand concept. They got right out of college. They learned a little bit out of a book. This is how we're going to do it. I'm going to design it like that. And as long as they sign off on it, they don't care. You know what I mean?
I've long been a proponent, Tom, of new engineers coming fresh out of college. They should have to go and work on the ground for a year so that they understand all the things that the people that they're building things for have to deal with. You know, it's and maybe that's a little bit much. Maybe a year is too long, but I've talked to so many guys. I've got a lot of friends in preventative maintenance and construction and things like that. And they'll all tell you, when I get a design from an engineer, I'm a lot like what you guys do. I load up, I go to the scale, I'm overweight, I got to go back. they get a design from an engineer. They look at it. They try to put it into practice. It won't work because of X, Y, or Z. And they got to wrap around and go back again. I've heard that problem. That's almost a trope where, you know, the people that are designing the facilities that you guys have to work in don't always know the problems that you're facing in said facilities, which makes it really hard to solve them if you don't know that they exist in the first place. So
just what do we get? Oh, we got to turn the amps down on that. We got to run this at a certain speed because we don't want our amps going high because it blows the breaker. How many times have you heard that, Justin?
I've heard that a bunch of times, so it'll clog up the pin down there in the pit.
So guess what you do? You come in with a bigger motor and bigger wiring, and you hook that to a bigger auger system because you redesign your pit. You make it big, and you turn everything up just a little bit more. You spend a couple $1 million because you're making $20 million a year, you know? And you spend a little money on this facility, and you make it where you could get in and get out, you know? Where you could turn that thing up, and you could run that product faster.
Yeah, but it's a lot cheaper to keep you there for 8 hours than it is to spend $1 million, Tom. that's the painful truth. I mean, that's got to be what they're thinking, right? These guys. Hey, I'd rather not pay the money.
Marcus, I can tell you right now, and this is to Justin too. I my thinking about life is just a way different from everybody else's. I've had a lot of money in my life, and I've been a millionaire once. Okay, I have. All right, and I've went through that money like crazy because I was young and dumb. Okay, young and dumb. All right, went out and bought stupid shit and all that. But I'm going to tell you right now, money is not everything. Money is not everything. Make your life simple. You know, you got FMCA, you got government in your pocket trying to tell you, you need to drive like this, you need to do this, you need to do that. It's dangerous driving 60, it's dangerous driving 70 miles an hour out here. We want everybody to drive 65. Well, that's dangerous. Texas had this is no lie. Texas did a deal back when I moved in 88 in Texas. The interstate was 65 miles an hour, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They moved it up to 70. The death rate went down. They moved it up to 75. The death rate went down again.
Interesting.
So the speed is actually on, let me tell you something. You go on a 2-lane back road in the state of Texas, no joke, 70 miles an hour. And we're talking about states like I'm in right now, Indiana, 55, Iowa, 55,
Oregon,
Nebraska, 55.
Yeah, Oregon, 55.
But you go to Texas, it's 70 miles an hour on 2-lane highways in Texas.
Wow.
Because of the death rate has went down because the speeds went up. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right. Yeah, they can see that shit and they can track it. And that's what it's all about is data. And it seems like we have a lot of data from drivers saying, hey, I'm wasting a lot of time at these shippers and receivers. And I don't think governing your speed down another 2 to 5 to 10 miles an hour is going to do anything to help any of these problems that we're currently facing.
So they drop your speed. Guess what that does? That drops the miles you make a week, and it drops the miles you put in a week. And guess what? That means H&M. I'll just throw H&M out there. Okay, if you're going to drop my miles a week, because I'm only going to be able to run 2,100 miles, does that mean you're going to pay me 85 cents a mile?
Right. I feel you, man. You know? Well, listen, guys, as much as I hate to say it, I would like to continue this conversation for another hour and a half, but we're up against the clock now. This episode's already going to be longer than what we normally do. So I want to thank you guys both for being here today. Tom Woods and Justin Shearer. I always do this before we sign off, and I want to leave a little bit of time. Justin, I'll start with you. Is there anything you want to say to any of your fellow drivers, fellow employees, maybe some family that's listening, or anybody else? If that's the case, the floor is yours, my friend.
Just be courteous to other drivers out there. That's all I can say. There's a lot of, you know, not very much common courtesy out here anymore. Just be courteous to your fellow drivers.
Well put. How about you, Tom?
Oh, I'm going to agree with Justin on that. You know, just be respectful. Look here. Like I said, I'm out here working. I ain't out here joyriding down the road and going to see grandma and grandpa, and be careful. Stay away from big trucks. If you're a fooler out here driving, stay away from big trucks. I'm out here working. I'm not out here for the pleasure. and don't brake check nobody. That's not good. And don't tailgate either. That's not good either.
Yeah, both of those things are asking for an accident for sure. And Tom,
be safe out here.
Tom, are you bald?
Bald?
Yeah, are you bald? Because I feel like
I don't know why you insulting me like that. It kind of hurts my feelings.
No, I'm just wondering because since you started coming on the podcast, sometimes you get fired up, and I'm worried that you might be tearing your hair out after you hang up the phone.
Well, I cut it to two. I do a number two on my haircut, so no, I'm not bald.
Okay, good. Well, just keep don't tear your hair out for me, Tom, because I love having you on here, and I know sometimes we get you fired up, man. I don't want you to not come back. You know.
You got me anytime you need me. And I met Justin on the road at West Memphis. Let me tell you something. We discussed some things out here. You know, we discussed stuff out here about the way the industry is. And it's very frustrating, you know?
Mm-hmm. I can tell.
It's very frustrating.
Sure.
It is.
I can tell.
It's not going to get any better. What needs to happen is the companies need to get together and they need to figure out what's it really going to take to make the industry good out here for everybody. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Make it safe.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we'll keep talking about it. We might not make enough noise, but we're going to try our best, Tom. That's why we're having these conversations. So, Justin, Tom, thank you both for taking the time to be here today. You guys, please stay safe out there, okay?
We're going to try.
All right, guys. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
There you have it, H&M Trucking. Episode 46 of the H&M Trucking podcast is in the books. You know, I don't often get a lot of time to kind of reflect on the things that we've talked about on this show because we're always running out of time, but I decided I'm not doing my homework today. I'm not going to tell you to click the subscribe button or go share this with your friends or find us on any of the social networks and communicate with us there, even though I just did that. I'm not going to do that today because I want to reflect a little bit. First off, having a guy like Denny Stone come around to talk to us on this podcast has been phenomenal, and it's really eye-opening to have somebody not only with the driving experience that he has, but the broadcasting experience. The dude is an absolute dynamo when it comes to doing things like this, podcasting, doing interviews, coming up with content. I'm really looking forward to what Denny's going to bring to this podcast in the days ahead of us. I'd also like to thank Dale Cook. That guy could have his own radio show, no questions asked. He's always just so well-spoken. He's got the voice for it. He's always got something to say. Hats off to Dale Cook coming on and giving us such a great interview today. Really appreciate that. As for my drivers, Tom Woods and Justin Shearer, you guys were awesome, man. That was so much fun. You know, I don't like it when I get Tom fired up. I like it because it's good for the podcast. You hear Tom get fired up, but I hate having to get off the phone with him knowing that I just got under his skin a little bit, fired him up, and then I just hang up and he's got to go deal with that. I will send Tom a text message, make sure he's doing okay. He's been really awesome on this podcast. In fact, he was the one that suggested we get Justin on for his first appearance, and Justin did a fantastic job. So Tom and Justin, if you're out there listening and rolling right now, please be safe and thank you for coming and spending the time with the H&M Trucking podcast. I'm endlessly thankful. If you guys want to be on this podcast, I would urge you to contact Sherry Vogler there in the front office. We have a list of drivers that we're pulling from constantly, and we're always trying to add to that list of drivers that are willing to come on whenever we want to have a conversation. And I think you're going to hear a lot in the future of these conversations are me getting on with a couple of drivers and letting them kind of hash things out, talk about some of the issues, talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. I love having two of them on at once, man. It gives us this extra perspective. And it allows the drivers to go back and forth a little bit so you can hear the things that they're really dealing with out there. And that's what this show's been really good for, is to peek behind the curtain a little bit, see what a day in the life of a driver is really like, the things that they deal with, the four-wheelers out there driving them nuts. Man, if nothing else, this podcast will make you a better four-wheeler for driving around big rigs. That's all I can say, because if you haven't heard these drivers come on here multiple times in a row and say, God damn it, these four-wheelers, we get it. And I can speak for myself and saying I'm trying to be better. I promise you that. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Episode 46 was awesome. Look forward to episode 47 next Wednesday at 5 a.m. I feel like there's something I'm forgetting here. Oh, stay fresh, cheese bags. I almost forgot.
Thank you for listening to the H&M Trucking Podcast. Please leave a review, subscribe, and connect with Marcus over at the H&M Trucking social media channels. And if you're considering a job at H&M, find us at hmtrucking.com. Until next time, stay safe and ahead of the curve drivers.